Welcome, Leaders Huddle listeners. Before we dive into today's topic, we have a few housekeeping notes. This episode is scheduled for release right after Thanksgiving. We are currently putting together the production schedule for the start of the new year. We are really interested in developing listener-requested content. We want to know what topics are relevant out in the force today in your unit, and what topics do you want to learn about in order to be a more effective leader. So go ahead and leave a suggestion for a future episode in the form of an iTunes review. While you are there, leave us a rating. They help draw attention to the podcast and attract new listeners. This podcast and all the resources Cowl provides are products of the Army, done on Army time with the intent of advancing the profession. iTunes reviews and word-of-mouth references are the best way to share this resource with other leaders out in the force. We certainly thank you for the continued support and feedback, and thank you in advance for leaving a review. Hey team, we are fired up to talk today with a subject matter expert on the topic of developmental coaching and organizational learning. We are pleased to welcome into the huddle certified executive coach, leader development expert, and Cowdall alumni, Major Retired Jonathan Silk. This is the Leaders Huddle episode number 15, Unleashing Leadership Potential Through Developmental Coaching. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I'm Captain David Wirt, your host for today's episode. With me today co-hosting this episode is Captain Micah Klein. Our guest for today is former Armor Officer Jonathan Silk, who is currently the Executive Director of Leadership Development at the University of North Texas Health Science Center. His last assignment as an active Army officer was as the assistant professor at the Center for the Advancement of Leader Development and Organizational Learning at the United States Military Academy, West Point, New York. Jonathan holds a bachelor's degree in business administration from Louisiana State University, an MBA from the University of Texas at Dallas, and a Master of Arts in Learning Technologies from Pepperdine University. He has completed the Columbia Coaching Certification Program at Columbia University and recently finished up their annual conference there. John, welcome into Leaders Huddle. Feel free to fill any gaps in that bio and tell us a little bit about yourself and your life down in Texas.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. When I was in the Army, I was both enlisted and also served as an officer, as you noted. I enlisted in the Army as an infantryman and had some really incredible leadership experiences. And I served as fire team leader, squad leader, and also had the opportunity to serve as a platoon sergeant. And during my one training rotation, I had this incredible training experience at the Joint Readiness Training Center in Fort Polk, Louisiana, where I served as a platoon leader, which was really the catalyst, the inspiration for me to pursue commissioning. Shortly after that, I put in my officer candidate school packet. I went to OCS in 2002, was commissioned as an armor officer. As an officer, I served as a cavalry scout platoon leader. I also served as a tank company commander in first time 72nd Armor, 1st Tank, Camp Casey, Korea. And I also served as infantry company commander at Fort Polk in the 162nd Infantry Brigade, where we deployed to Afghanistan as advisors to the Afghan National Police. After coming back from Afghanistan, I also served as the S3 for our battalion and then went to grad school at Pepperdine and route to West Point.
So today we're talking all about coaching, specifically developmental coaching in the leader development business that we all are in our various roles, either at West Point or down in Dallas, Texas. And I'll say prior to my grad school experience at Columbia and my own immersion into executive coaching, my mental schema of coaching really centered around my athletic experience. So as I learned more about developmental coaching, I realized that I had participated really in coaching relationships throughout my career, either on the receiving end or giving out coaching. And that's really the focus for today. We'll talk a little bit about what FM 622, the Leader Development Field Manual for the Army, defines coaching. And really, John, I want to hear your definition as the most experienced of the three of us on how you define coaching, how you practice it, and really the benefit for getting into a coaching relationship for the junior officers, the junior leaders that are listening to this podcast?
All right. So I think it's important to note that there's a lot of different types of coaches out there with several types of, you know, there's a wide spectrum of definitions of coaching. So when Brandon and I wrote the article, this was based on our experiences both as company commanders and also holding other leadership positions in the Army, and both in our experiences at Columbia. So we define coaching as a learning and change process that builds a leader's capabilities to achieve professional organizational goals, with really the focus of the coaching is being on the leaders who are in the position to make a significant contribution to the organization's purpose and mission. When we wrote that, we had company level leaders in mind, and really the purpose of a coach in our model there is to help the subordinate in a leader subordinate role, to help the subordinate do their best thinking and come to their own point of learning, their own realization of the best solution that works for them and their subordinate unit.
I was going to say, I think that is rather important to the fact that you include the alignment of personal and organizational goals. And that's something that sometimes gets overlooked when we're talking about coaching for career development in the Army. But I think my personal preference is trying to focus on helping a leader in an organization self solve an organizational dynamic problem. That's where I find personally my sweet spot.
I said, one of the things I love, the focus of my coaching that I really get, I get passionate about is on improving your abilities as a leader. And so there's always goals for coaching. A common method of coaching is asking about what are your goals for coaching. But too many times, if you're coaching a subordinate, those goals that they have in their mind are tied to their OER, their NCOER. So, and that sometimes can have a negative connotation. That might be their Raiders' goals for them. They're not their personal goals. One question I like to ask at the beginning of a coaching engagement, we're talking engagement like 6 to 12 sessions or longer, is what is your personal vision for leadership? Because vision is usually tied to passion and strengths. And so once the individual being coached lays out their vision and you get all that passion and strength in there, then you have a vision you're coaching toward, and you're basically doing strengths-based coaching within leadership. And then you can bring in the goals and see how those align as well.
Cool. So we've got a pretty awesome background, some experience that you've got on coaching. Can you elaborate a little bit and tell us a little bit about your background experience with coaching, what you're doing right now, and what brought you to coaching, I guess, and your interest in that?
So first I'll start with the informal experiences back in the day. I'm dating myself, but the mentor I'm about to talk about was my company commander, and our battalion commander was General Campbell, who was a former vice chief of staff in the Army. So back when he was a battalion commander, I was a squad leader, and our company commander, who later became a mentor to me, he would coach us. He probably didn't realize he was coaching us. I didn't at the time realize I was being coached. But I know during the after action reviews, or after squad live fires, after squad exercises, he would be down there and using a really coaching type questions to see what we could learn from the experience, and then how we could become better. And it worked. I was a good, I had a very, very high performing squad, and we continuously got better. Then in my MBA program, I'm going to start coming to my formal experiences with coaching. In my MBA program, we had executive coaches there. And that was just a really powerful experience for me. The coach helped me make sense of my Army experiences and how they could apply to the MBA program. We were studying business, so how I could apply some of those experiences in the Army to the business world. When I deployed to Afghanistan as a advisor to the Afghan National Police, I used coaching. I mean, I coached the Afghan national police leaders that I was working with. Not all the time, but whenever possible, I used coaching questions to in my role so they could actually learn what come up with the best solutions for what worked for their units and for their leadership styles. And I didn't want to, you know, as an advisor, you have really two opportunities where you can give advice, but your advice is based on your own experiences. It's not necessarily, nested in the, settled in there with the Afghans context. But coaching, when you coach someone, you coach them into their own, they come to a solution that works for them, their own learning. That's a more powerful way, and that's something that's sustainable. After coming back from Afghanistan, when I was up at West Point as a faculty member at Caldol, I decided I wanted to get certified as a executive coach and went through the Columbia's coaching certification program. When I transitioned from the Army, I got hired for the position of executive director of leadership development at the University of North Texas Health Science Center. In my role there, I've established a leadership coaching program where we trained a pool of internal coaches, and every participant in our three different programs gets a coach for the duration of that program. We also have a performance coaching program where we have supervisors. We train supervisors to coach their direct reports. And on the side, I have my own coaching business as well.
That's sweet. You just mentioned briefly that you, as a leader, used to ask coaching questions during your time as an Army officer. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean when you say coaching questions?
So if you think about, if we're having developmental conversation, there's a continuum there, there's a spectrum. And it can go from coaching to directive. So and it also depends on context and the situation. But suppose after a training event, if we're looking, there's two types of coaching I'm going to probably reference. One is like laser or in the moment coaching, which is suitable for right after an event if the opportunity presents itself. Then there's more longer coaching engagements, which I referenced earlier, like 6 to 12 or longer engagements. Part of it, more of a coaching program. But in either way, you're asking questions, open-ended questions about the experience that leader just had. So instead of telling, like, as a company commander, one of my lieutenants, here's what I think you could have done better, which is very directive. I could say, hey, lieutenant, how do you think you could have done better? And then they're doing, that's empowering them to do their best thinking. It's also giving me as the coach an understanding of how they saw that experience developing, and I'm getting in how they saw that experience through their own lens. Then you from there you continue to build. So what are some options for you? And then you're making them explore. They're exploring all their different options, and you're really empowering them to do their best thinking and come up with their own solution.
Awesome. Yeah, I can see that being definitely more beneficial than, being directive or telling them what they need to do to improve. So that's very cool. Thanks.
When you tell somebody, and what I've learned over time, having been on the receiving end of this as well, go do it this way. There's no, there might not be an understanding of what you're supposed to go do. And two, you're implementing someone else's solution. You're using someone else's solution. It's not your own solution. Then you don't have the ownership of it.
John, I was also going to say that when you speak from a position of experience and you just tell maybe a subordinate how to solve a problem that you think you have the solution to because you've been in a situation like that before, you really discount or sacrifice the learning aspect that could happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that's so, I think, top of mind right now with me, with my cadets. And I really, really liked how you brought in open-ended question and questioning or coaching through questioning. What I've personally been trying to practice the last 2 weeks is asking better questions to be a better leader and ask questions to help I think those I interact with come to their own sort of resolution on how to approach that issue. I think that's so powerful And it's almost a mindset shift than what we traditionally get taught in our leader sort of model archetypes.
Yeah, if I could build off mindset for a moment, it's very important. I love what you just said about mindset. So as a leader who wants to coach their subordinates, and I would just say that that's a mindset. Like, I want to develop my subordinates, not to be replicas of me, but to develop and grow and become their own, you know, their own individual. They'll learn their own individual styles and they'll learn on their own. The mindset, you come to the table with the learner mindset. We have an opportunity. We can switch between two different mindsets, learner mindset and judger mindset. And we naturally go flow between the two. And in the Army, so many times we look at lieutenants as, you know, these brand new inexperienced leaders. But if we were just to look at of a cadet that comes in at West Point, they go through their plebe year, then their yearling year, then they go through their cow year, and then they go through their first year. That is 4 years of experience. They're also exposed to some incredible leaders at West Point, the faculty members. So now the lieutenant that arrives at the battalion squadron now they do have experience. I think it's important for us to realize that everyone that we coach within the military has experience. They have been through training. They've been exposed to other leaders, and they're full of experiences. So by staying in the learner mindset, we're going to learn everything about them. If we stay in a judger mindset, we just look at them. Here, there's a brand new fresh lieutenant. He or she doesn't know anything. But the learner mindset is acknowledging that, you know what? They do have experiences. I'm going to tap into that through coaching and help them come to their own solution. Judger mindset's like, you don't know anything. Now I'm going to be directive.
Yeah, and I think I could say I certainly did that as a company commander of sacrificing the development to the behest of just getting to an easy solution because everything was time sensitive. It was in the moment, urgent, solve a problem, move on to the next thing, instead of focusing on that important leader development aspect, which sort of segue to our next question. In episode 9, we had the opportunity to interview Colonel Kimball about the true definition of mentorship and what a mentoring relationship looks like at the company level. Now that you've helped define what coaching is, how can those listeners out there establish a coaching relationship at the company level?
That's an excellent question. I think, first of all, we have to acknowledge that I'm going to go back to the mindset. As a leader, we need to understand that we have an impact on our junior leaders, and that every interaction we have with them is either a positive or negative. There's really no neutral. And Edgar Schein writes about that in his Organizational Leadership and Culture. But every interaction we have a chance to have a positive or negative impact on our leaders. So understanding your role in the leader development, it's almost, you know, taking a generational approach to leader development. Understanding that if you're coaching lieutenants, if you're an NCO coaching corporals or sergeants, that they're going to go on to lead others. And that really, the soldiers they go on to lead will feel your impact through the people you've developed. Two, so it's really that mindset. Then it's establishing relationships based on trust. Without trust, you really can't coach. And then you need to go to another form of more directive developmental conversations. So really the trusting relationship, a relationship of trust and mutual respect has to be in place. And also the coaching conversations have to be safe. The individual being coached has to know that they can speak freely. So we kind of probably need to drop rank and position, put that to the side, because so many times in the Army, rank and position get in the way of the free flow of ideas. So that's around the trust. And this is not the individual, the leader being coached has to know that this is not going to be part of my OER, my NCOER. This is not going on my counseling form. Maybe some of the outcomes that we agree to, but the content that is exchanged, the ideas, the conversation that's exchanged and during the session is not being used to evaluate them. So those are kind of the conditions that have to be in place. Then optimally, this is a type of engagement that lasts the duration, from a company commander's perspective, if you're in command 12 to 18 months, you're using this relationship with your lieutenants, developing them and encouraging them to use this with their NCOs And it's this type of engagement's running the length of your command time. So we're talking, you know, in the business world, in nonprofit sector, coaching engagements usually last 6 to 9 months. So we're talking that long of an engagement where commanders are doing this type of coaching, this type of development for really the duration of their you know, time in command.
So John, what about, do you have any thoughts on just peer coaching, lieutenant to lieutenant, across companies, staff officer to platoon leader when they're working on an organizational problem? Have you seen that? And do you have any actionable, I guess, advice for some lieutenants that are out there looking to potentially do this?
Yeah, actually, that's a great question. I would just say if we were lieutenants serving together, and I wanted to come borrow, you know, we're running a platoon lane or something, and I come over and ask you for your op order so I can just change the, make it my own. Instead of doing that, where, I mean, you would definitely be helping me out, you could just coach me through that. You could ask questions like, what do you think the commander's intent is? What are some of your key tasks you have to perform? And in doing that, and then from me, you'll elicit, you know, everything I understand about the commander's intent, everything my unit's supposed to perform. And then you can start asking some questions. What are some options for you to accomplish that mission? So through coaching, and with the responses you elicit out of me, we're writing my, you know, parts of my op order. That's an example I have.
Awesome. I'd love to transition into actually your article on the Strategy Bridge, which for all of our listeners out there, we'll include in the show notes of this podcast. And in that article, you mentioned the Eagle coaching model. So for our listeners who haven't read the article yet, can you please tell us a little bit about what the Eagle coaching model is? What inspired your coaching model? And when I say inspired, I mean personally, or from an organizational psychology perspective with any theory or anything like that.
So thank you for asking that question. So Brandon and I, and Brandon was, I got to know Brandon through the company command forums, and then we're faculty members at West Point together. We both had these great coaching experiences at Columbia, and we used to sit around a lot and talk about, we needed to write an article. And what we both, we both knew from our experiences in the Army that a lot of senior Army leaders said they knew how to coach, but they're not coaching, at least not in a developmental way. And we saw that there was references in Army leadership doctrine to coaching. There was explanations of coaching, but at no point in time were leaders being developed or given the skills, either in the NCO courses or any of the officer courses. Basically, coaching skills didn't exist anywhere in professional military education that we knew of, that we had experienced. And we saw the need that if the Army is going to reference this in their doctrine, we need to have a model that'll work for everybody. That, you know, from the, you know, as soon as you become a leader in the Army at the junior NCO level or junior officer level, that you can use this model throughout your time in the military, or, you know, throughout your time in leadership. So it came from, that's the inspiration for it. And so in the model we put together is based on a lot of different models that are, you know, models that are being used out there in nonprofit world and the corporate world.
Awesome. So in your article, you mentioned the role of the thinking partner. I don't know. That just really, I guess, stuck with me a little bit. How would you advise our listeners out there to be on the lookout for someone who would make a good thinking partner?
So I think, yeah, the role of a coach is really that, you know, is to be the thinking partner, to help the person being coached to do their best thinking. So when you're looking for someone who could coach you, I think you're looking for someone that you think you can learn from, that you have respect for, you trust them, and someone you think that can help you do your best thinking. Not someone that's going to give you the solution, but someone that's going to help you do your best thinking and come up with your own solution to whatever, you know, problem, issue you're trying to address.
Okay, yeah, I can see that making sense. One thing that I remember learning, I mean, that really stuck with me when I went through the coaching classes down there at Columbia, was the ORID framework. And I think that's something that, I mean, would be cool to share. So when we talk about the ORID framework, and I think it was mentioned in the article as well, can you tell us what the ORID framework is?
Yes. The ORID framework, it's really designed to identify responses that the subordinate is avoiding and then bring those responses to the surface by using the ORID framework. What the ORID framework, so when we talk ORID, we're talking about objective type questions, reflective type questions, interpretive type questions, and decisional type questions. And this model overlaps beautifully with David Kolb's experiential learning model. And David Kolb, he knows the four processes in the experiential learning model are concrete experience, reflective observation, there's abstract conceptualization, and active experimentation. So the way the model works is overlapped with that, as we're asking those questions that are tied to those types of experiences. So as we're moving through the framework, I just want to give an example of how the ORID framework works with Kolb's experiential learning theory, which I'll just give a brief plug for that. I think every leader in the Army should understand that theory. So if we look at O as objective types questions, those are tied to the experience the leader is having. So ask questions around that. You know, what did you experience? In that, what were some of the sounds you heard tied to the experience? Then we'll move into reflective types questions, which is tied to the reflective observation in the experiential learning model. Asking questions about what they thought, what did they learn from that? Then we move over to interpretive type questions, and that's tied to the abstract conceptualization part of Kolb's model. You know, asking them, what do you think, questions around meaning, meaning what the experience meant to them. And then we move into the decisional type questions, which is tied to the active experimentation in Kolb's model. And that's where we're getting into, so what are some of your options? What are you committing to do? And then we go back through the cycle.
You know, it's interesting. Just hearing you talk about that, I can totally see that being, I guess, a good framework for the after-action review. I see this picture right now of sitting around with my lieutenants as a company commander, my squad leaders as a platoon leader, and asking them about the objective data. Hey, like, what actually happened? A different way to do AARs, I guess. I could use the ORID framework for that. So, very cool. I'd like to move on to our next question. And sticking on the topic of your strategy bridge article with Bryn and Soltwich, perhaps the most intriguing thing about your article were the seven deadly sins of coaching, which, if that doesn't spike your interest, I don't know what will. But which of those thinking traps that you referenced in the article do you think that Army leaders are most subject to?
Well, first of all, that's a great question. That's kind of why we wrote it, because you didn't read anything else in the article. You need to read this. So coaching sin number one is, first, it's tied to establishing a relationship based on trust and mutual respect. And what we talked about, coaching sin number one is keeping your guard up. If you, in the coaching engagement, if you're a company commander and, you're having your subordinates call you, sir, ma'am, captain, captain so-and-so, you're putting your rank and title down as a barrier between communication, good communication flow between you and your subordinate. And that's not really establishing a relationship built on trust. Your subordinate leader might not feel that they're in a position where they can say anything they want in the coaching engagement. You have to create this space where, we can have free-flowing conversation. So that's first the first sin. I think that's number one. That's tied to establishing trust. You have to create that environment. And rank and title can go to the side, at least in the context of that conversation. And, you can bring back, and you set the expectations in the conversation. What we call entry and contracting. You can say, in terms of our coaching engagements, feel free to call me John during this, when we're back outside of this outside of this environment, you know, you refer back for me to as Sir or Captain Silk. But that's you set the boundaries right there, but you need to create that space that where the your subordinate leader feels like they can open up and actually answer honestly those questions. And they can do their best thinking with you. The second sin, forcing the issue, is the next one I see a lot of Army leaders having a lot of problems with. Because you truly have to give your subordinate a choice in what they want to work on. If we talk about goals for coaching, and when I'm coaching one of my lieutenants, and they say, "Hey, sir, you know, here are my goals, A, B, and C." And I say, "Well, no, Lieutenant, E, F, and G should be your goals." That is no longer coaching. That's a more directive form of a developmental conversation. So you have, as coaches, you know, a leader as coach, we have to be comfortable with our subordinates selecting their own goals and then coaching them along with those goals. And lastly, all these sins are important. I'm just going to highlight the first three, but they're all important. One of the beautiful things about the Army is we have to serve in every leadership position. To be a company commander, you have to have served as a lieutenant. So we know that, you know, we have a lot of the same experiences our lieutenants are. And naturally, as leaders, we want to solve problems. But as coaches, when we're coaching, we're there to help the leader that we're coaching, that lieutenant. If it's a commander-lieutenant relationship, we're coaching that lieutenant. If it's an NCO, maybe it's a platoon sergeant squad leader, we're coaching that subordinate leader. So we're helping them do their best thinking so they can find their own solution. And we're not there to solve it for them. And if they come back and say to you and say, "Hey, sir, hey, sergeant, what would you do?" That's when you deflect right back to them and say, "No, well, let's go through your options." But we don't want it. So that's one problem if leaders have, I think I see having with this, is they want to solve the problem for their subordinates. So I think in all the sins are important. Coaching sin number three, trying to solve the problem too early, is another issue, another problem. Another coaching sin I think Army leaders at company level and at all levels will grapple with. It's just as leaders, we want to help solve the problem. And also, you know, in the Army, you know, to become a company commander, you've had to have been a lieutenant. To be a squad leader, you've had to serve as a section leader, fire team leader. To be a platoon sergeant, you had to be a staff sergeant before. So we've had those experiences our subordinate leaders have had, and we want to help solve problems. That's, you know, one of the functions of a leader, help solving problems, implementing change, leading change. However, in a coaching relationship, as leaders, we have to be comfortable that we're there to help the leader we're coaching help solve their problem. And we're there to help them do their best thinking to come up with their own solution to the problem. So it's being comfortable with that, understanding our role in that, and then asking the questions. And if our subordinate asks us, "What would you do?" And then we're deflecting right back and ask, you know, deflecting the questions back, "Well, let's explore some of your options there." We're not giving them the solution. But if we don't like where the conversation's going, if our new lieutenant is listing options that are totally out of this world, and we get frustrated and we say, "Hey, no, lieutenant, you just listed A, B, and C as your options. Here, you're going to go do E, F, and G." Then we're not coaching anymore. It's a more directive type of conversation.
Yeah, you know, it's funny hearing you say number one, you know, keeping your guard up. I think about that all the time. The Army had it's no secret, a little bit of an issue in terms of like toxic leadership is being, I guess, something that the Army was dealing with, a number of years back. And just think about how awesome it would be. An awesome meaning, I mean, just an incredible experience, if some of those leaders were, exposed to coaching relationships. But I think that sometimes, just given, you know, the profession and what it is, that sometimes we focus a little bit more on, you know, our rank, and I'm just as guilty as that, and see that as a barrier, and how awesome a coaching relationship would be if folks that were in leadership positions would engage in that, whether it be, you know, voluntary or something that just, you know, there was a program out there that people could reach out for that, I guess.
No, I think it's also your mindset of leader. What is your, when, how we see ourselves with our role as leaders? I'm a commander, you know, a responsibility to command the company I'm in, but I also have a responsibility to develop leaders. Do I want to develop them for the short term or the long term? Understanding that any one of our lieutenants could be the next, you know, chief of staff of the Army in 30 years. So do we want to develop them for the long term? And we're taking that generational approach to leader development. And we're using coaching skills. We're developing them. We're modeling for them what coaching looks like. So they will, as they, on their journeys through the military, through the Army, they'll go on to, they'll model that as well. And through that, we have this generational impact on the future of the Army.
So John, you're talking a lot about, I think, horizontal and vertical skill development. And horizontal skill development of getting another credential or going and getting another ASI is rather easy, but teaching your coaching clients, if you want to say that, or your subordinates, your lieutenants, the people under your sphere of influence, how to challenge them to think differently, handle more complex situations, be comfortable with ambiguity, and understand that every solution is not a binary answer. That's really vertical development, and that to me is like the sweet spot of coaching in the Army. That we again, in my experience, having not known what coaching really was prior to this ELDP program, I kind of discredited it a lot.
I think you're right. I think people have a misconception of coaching, where they say they're coaching and they're really thinking about athletic type coaching, and it's a different, you know, athletic type coaching. You know, you're coaching a team to win. Earlier I defined coaching as a learning and change process, and helping somebody do their best thinking. So there's a different, you know, there's different type of coaching, and each type of coaching has its own definition. But this type of coaching, when we're coaching, especially when we use the ORID model, I talked about, we're tying in, to the ORID model, which is tied to Kolb's experience in learning. We're developing leaders, coaching them. They're learning from their experiences, coming up with their own solutions. And we can take them where they can learn to reflect on action. And as they continue to use this model, they're learning to reflect and learn in action, which is very powerful if we want to develop adaptive and agile leaders. This is the type of skill that all leaders need to do to deal with the issues, you know, the complexities of the environment we're operating in as an Army.
So before I move on to our last question, John, sort of I think a coaching hack I've started to use is I'm modeling this from someone else. I saw it, so I can't take credit for it. But I actually printed out a PowerPoint slide with the ORD framework on the four quadrants. I keep it on my desk or on my screen when I have a cadet who brings to me an issue that's very relevant. It helps me kind of work through the process, and we get to a point of taking action. So we've talked a lot about coaching, at the theoretical aspect, and also almost at the tactical, operational, how we can take action. So I want to close the podcast with offering some advice for the company commanders or platoon leaders out there who are listening to this episode, or they don't have to be those formal leaders. They can be staff leaders, because let's face it, there's a lot of good coaching on staff that could happen, or at the squad, platoon sergeant level, keeping those people in mind, and they're thinking about taking a coaching approach to develop their subordinates. What's one major takeaway you'd offer them from this episode, or just simply giving them a starting point of learning a little bit more about how they can incorporate coaching into their leader development practice?
So I would tell them first, read the article Brandon and I wrote. It's applicable to leaders at all levels in the Army, really in the military. But this entails self-development. We have to develop ourselves. It's what's required. It's part of our leadership development model as well. So for self-development, it requires professional reading. I would recommend three books. One is Words That Change Minds by Shelley Rose Charvet. Another one is Coactive Coaching. And a third book is Humble Inquiry by Edgar Schein. And those books really talk about, you know, coaching, you know, asking powerful coaching questions, the mindset required to be in a coaching, and also, you know, the different types of listening, active listening, which is required to truly understand the leader you're coaching and where they are. And then I really encourage them to get involved with leaders around them and have conversations about this. I'd love to offer myself as a resource. They can reach out to me, but let's start a coaching conversation around, you know, write a blog about coaching and offer, say, you know, use social media. Social media is a great sort resource for learning. Use social media, write a blog, and start a conversation, and then learn from everyone else's experiences.
So, John, I'm glad you recommended books. I'm obviously a big reader myself, and there's one book that's on my reading list and that was recommended a lot to me this past year. That was, I think it's Marshall Goldsmith's "What Got You Here Won't Get You There," and I definitely want to check that out. He has, I think he's a frequent guest on a podcast I want to offer up to all of our listeners called Coaching for Leaders. It's out. It's done by an executive coach out in Orange County, California. He talks a lot about just leader development frameworks, everything from emotional intelligence to how to handle conflict in your organization. Another good podcast is the Team Coaching Zone. And then, John, I'll ask you to elaborate on the resource you were talking to us in the pre-show rehearsal about the Coach Agora.
Yes. So myself and another coach from the Columbia program, following the model of a strategy bridge, wanted to set up a resource where coaches could write about their experiences, write about coaching, and share it. So we started coachagora.com, and it's really a site where coaches come in, they can post. There's a variety of posts right there right now, mostly written by myself and my other coach. But there are different views on coaching and how coaching can be used in different types of environments as well as situations.
I'll definitely have to check out that website, and we'll be sure to include it into our show notes. And so, John, I really want to thank you for your time. Mike, you got anything before I ask John how people can follow him on social media?
No, I mean, this was every conversation we have is just more and more, eye-opening in terms of coaching. So thanks for coming on to the podcast.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me. This is something, I think coaching is a very powerful tool for leader development in the Leader Developers Toolkit. And I think it, you know, I would talk about it as much as I can. Everyone should learn it.
So, John, you mentioned having a conversation about coaching on social media. Can you leave our listeners with how they can follow you on Twitter, Facebook, the other social media platform?
So on Twitter, I have a variety of numerous Twitter handles, but the main one I use is @frontlineleader. Also, I'm on Facebook, Jonathan Silk. And I generally post, I post about coaching quite often in general leader development.
Okay, awesome. We'll get you. I think I follow you on Twitter, so I'll make sure we get those captured in the show notes. And I definitely read some of the articles you've posted. And again, thank you for your time, John. We'll be interested to follow you as you post more stuff coming out of the recent coaching conference. And hopefully we can have you back on the podcast and maybe more of a action-oriented type of discussion on coaching now that we've sort of introduced it to our listeners.
Yep, I'd love to. I did one more thing I want to add. Building off Colonel Ray Kimball's mentoring work, I think coachings can support mentors in the role of when a mentor, you know, in a relationship, if they come to a point where they don't, you know, they're facing an experience that maybe their protege or the protege is facing an experience they haven't experienced before, they don't feel they could give advice, then, you know, the mentor can go into coaching mode and coach the protege. So I think coaching can support mentoring very well.
That'd be great. I mean, that'd be, you just gave me another idea for another episode. So I'll have to write that down, chew on it, and I'll come back to you in a few weeks.
But no, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if that fits in there, but it can be, it can bring young men, like young mentors or in young coaches. It's hard to, you know, people confuse the two, but yeah. You know, coaching can be used in a mentor relationship.
No, and I totally agree. And we use mentoring as a catch-all for leader development. Yeah. When in reality, it is, I think, a good percentage of the issues that we face in our context are coaching, especially if we follow the line of thinking of the Army's definition and Colonel Kimball's definition for mentoring. And so with that, I'm going to wrap up today's Leaders Huddle podcast, and we'll thank our guest, John Silk, again. In the next episode, we take a deep dive into the topic of the multi-source assessment feedback and interview Colonel Kevin McGanich about his recent article that was published in the issue of the Military Review on that subject, specifically how you can use the MSAF as a catalyst for leader development. You can connect with us at iTunes, and we're also on the Google Play platform. We want to hear from you, our listeners, on the topics you would like us to discuss, so please leave a comment on iTunes or through the Catalyst Sponsor Facebook page. That is at Company Command, and the Twitter handle at CO CMD. Until next time, remember that elevating your performance and unleashing your potential as a leader takes intentionality and the humility to learn from others. The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.